From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. So, former Chelsea Housing Chief Mike McLaughlin gets to plead guilty to federal charges for padding his salary and then trying to lie about it and hide the fact. He's cooperating with the feds. He could still face some charges. But it looks like these federal investigators, Michael Goldman, you got to help me out with this, and Attorney General, are basically have their sights set on bigger fish. This guy has already admitted that he took $360,000, which was well beyond what he reported and well beyond what the job, you know, should have paid or what he deserved. And I hate to sound like Harvey Silverglade here. I love Harvey Silverglade, but I'm, you know, he's into all the conspiracies with the feds. I'm going to join him on this. It's like crazy. Talk about overreach. You've got your guy. What are we doing here?
Well, I got to start off by saying that Michael McLaughlin, I've known almost my entire career, so I'm there's a personal sense here.
Yeah, I'm not taking any glee in this at all. I'm saying the man has admitted his guilt.
I want to just start off by saying that I don't want to be, you know, truth in advertising, if you will. but I, here's the way this plays out. And I was just literally this morning talking to a reporter about this. When you deal, as Harvey Silverglade will tell you, when you deal with the feds, it's always a roll of the dice. What are they looking for? What is the big picture? What do people say in front of a grand jury? What do they think really matters to them in terms of, quote unquote, the public good? And since every U.S. attorney can decide every single case based on how they feel about that individual case, it seems to have no rhyme or reason. In this particular case, you make a good point. You know, Michael McLaughlin has admitted that whatever he did as in terms of the good stuff he did at Chelsea. And interestingly enough, if you read the First Globe story, he was an amazingly successful executive director. They did incredible kinds of things. That doesn't negate the bad thing. It's just it wasn't like he went in there and raped and pillaged and there was nothing there. It's clear to me that somewhere along the way, this case became something else. And that is, as you mentioned,
it's about
the fundraising.
Possibly about
exactly.
Lieutenant Governor Tim Murray and this alleged illegal fundraising that Mike McLaughlin did for him. But so what? I mean, I hate to be just dismissive, but that doesn't sound like that big a deal to me. I mean, you know, and I have to say at this point, I just believe Tim Murray. He's not intentionally involved in any kind of illegal fundraising or whatever. And let's say there was some illegal fundraising. Let's just stipulate that there was, or it was untoward or something. You've already got your guy. I have to say, I'm.
It's interesting. It's an interesting point of view, and one that I don't necessarily disagree with. They clearly feel as though the single most important thing to them, I believe, is when they have you in front of a grand jury that you tell the truth. And if they find that you didn't tell the truth or you diverted them in a direction, they turn on you. And again, I'm getting this, as you are, through the bits and pieces that we're getting in the Globe. But it is clear that somebody went in there.
Had to be McLaughlin.
And basically, or someone else after McLaughlin maybe did it and basically said no. They knew exactly what was going on, that's why, again, it's also interesting when you think about Tommy Finneran. Tommy Finneran did not get convicted of something he did wrong. He got convicted because he lied about something he did, which was right.
Right.
I mean, he had every right to do what he did, but didn't want anyone to know he did what he could legally do.
Which was the gerrymandering of
the districts. And the reality is that in real life, whether it's here or Texas, politics comes into play. And he lost his license to practice law, not because he did something wrong, but because he lied about it in front of a grand jury. Mm-hmm. So to the degree that I wonder if Carmen Ortiz was here with you today, she would say to you, Emily, we have to make sure that when people come in front of us, they know that that is the big crime. And I can't
Let's say everybody who testified before the grand jury told the truth, including Michael McLaughlin. And maybe said, well, you know, Tim Murray knew about illegal fundraising. So what? So why would you give him a pass?
Well,
I don't understand it. It's
very hard to see this thing because we don't see all the pieces of the puzzle. I have the same reaction you have. I really do. I have to believe that there's a bigger piece here that I'm not seeing.
I'm doubting it.
You know,
I'm doubting it.
Listen,
as we've seen with the overreach of the federal government in recent cases, they just want to go for the next fish down the line. And if it's got a bigger name, nobody knows who Michael McLaughlin is, except for he's been in the front page of the papers in the last couple of days. But everybody knows, or most people know, who Tim Murray is.
But that's always the way it's been. It's Harvey Silverglade, anyone who wants to read a great book.
Harvey, we're talking about you. I hope you're listening.
No, it's true, though.
Three felonies a day. I know.
The system is about moving up the food chain. Mm-hmm. And it's always been about that. It's been about that since the U.S. attorney's been in office. What I really think is interesting is Carmen Ortiz, for a long time, was very much reminded me of the old Ray Flynn when he first was mayor. He was totally Teflon, and nothing stuck. And then it seems like she's become Velcro. Everything that she's done seems to be bouncing back negatively on her and her office. It's fascinating to see how that happens and how the worm turns, you know.
Well, I haven't seen anybody turn on the U.S. Attorney's office on this other than me.
Well, no, I mean, Machi Egan today.
And
there's been a number of people who have basically said that there was overreach. That there's a hearing in Washington about the young man who died.
Aaron Schwartz.
It's been a rough couple of
he was the guy, the MIT guy who was accused of downloading some files. And
the amazing thing is that, again, goes back to the big question: Citizens United on the national level and locally, and that is fundraising and how we fundraise and who has access and what that access means. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for close to 45 years, and we've been talking about it for every day I've been doing it. And
I mean, let's assume the worst
to
here.
Run.
Let's say that these fundraisers, and I'm not sure exactly, right. Maybe you can explain it to me, that some of this money was diverted, not illegally, but, you know, that maybe people gave more than the limited. I don't know. Let's just say that's the truth.
He can't fundraise. From what I can understand, he cannot fundraise because he was hatched. So the fact
what do you
that
mean
he,
hatched?
Meaning that he, in his job, he was covered by the Hatch Act, which meant he could contribute as a citizen. He can't
Who's
ask
he?
Anyone else. McLaughlin.
Okay.
So when McLaughlin became a fundraiser for allegedly for Tim Murray, then that is a fairly significant violation of the Hatch Act.
I see.
And that is a big deal to these people. Again, it's when I was working many years ago for the Carter administration at the Federal Trade Commission with Lois Pines and with Bob Reich, we were hatched. We could not do certain kinds of things. And they were very strict. They were very strict. And again, the question is, we don't know what allegedly they did. We don't know whether this money – my presumption is that, again, everything I've ever heard about Tim Murray has always been good.
Yeah, me too.
I mean,
the press was really tough on him on that car accident from a year and a half ago.
But it had nothing to do with this.
I ended up believing every word he said. I was skeptical. I think it was all the circumstances were very, very odd and strange. But hey, you know. Oh, well, we have a late arrival on the scene here. Garrett
Quinn, surprise.
From the Less Is More blog. We've already taken care of this subject. We're talking about Chelsea Housing Chief Mike McLaughlin getting this, you know, sweetheart plea deal, frankly. I mean, you know, he still may do some time in jail, but, you know.
You know what's really fascinating?
A year, 18 months, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Is that
– not even that.
Compared to what's Al DeMacy, it's really
– Well, again, it's a very tough business, and when you're dealing with the feds, you know, it's catch as catch can, and who makes the deal, and who's got something to offer, and what are they going to say, and – You know,
wouldn't you say anything if the feds were offering you a deal 18 months versus 18 years?
I'll tell you something, Emily.
You didn't say anything.
The fact that I've been paying you off all these years for those stories, I got to tell you, you know, in cash.
Yeah.
You know, so
I still can't believe he had the gall to just be so arrogant when he was interviewed on this.
Who?
Just McLaughlin. Hmm. The piece he did with the Globe. I forget who did the original piece, and he was just so cavalier, such a cavalier attitude.
And the reason for that is
and he got nailed.
There is no housing authority in the country that won more national awards for performance than did the Chelsea Authority. If you read that story, the people across the country call him a superstar. That's where the word came from. So it's sort of interesting that he had a record. He had something that he was proud of. You know, again, you could ask the other questions as it's come along are different. But in the original story,
I mean, but it was tax evasion, right, in the end, because he was getting $360,000. He was only reporting $220,000. That's tax evasion. That's a pretty serious offense.
Well, the question I always have had—
Well, I mean, it, depending on how you work with— I mean, in a lot of cases, if you work with the IRS and you're not a total, you know, jerk about it, you can generally avoid going to jail. You'll pay fines. But in a higher profile cases like this, Wesley Snipes is another great example. Mm-hmm. If you really, well, I'm serious. If you really stick it
to,
if you are completely uncooperative and really stick it to the IRS, they will come after you.
Oh, no, like,
he did
that.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
If you work with them, if you're cooperative, they'll generally not. They don't want to put you in jail.
It may very well be that he paid taxes on the total amount of money, but while he reported the smaller amount of money, it is very possible that he paid every dime of his taxes on the big dollars. But when it came to filing the report that said how much you're making, he only put down the small.
He was given legally given these raises, as I understand it, by the board of whatever the authority.
And they were the ones that actually signed.
He told the Globe that he didn't report it. Because it was the rebel in him.
You have to know Michael to get that line, I guess. But you know, the more important thing here is the one you brought up before, which is what does the public think, or who does the public think
is the villain?
Is the villain in this thing? Is it he or is it somebody else who might be hiring?
No, the public thinks it's him.
Oh, it's absolutely him. The public loves to see – I'll say this as journalists too. We sort of love to see high-profile executive authorities just get caught up in these just like ugly scandals like this. So the public is going to – obviously it's going to be – let's say the lieutenant governor is somehow – something comes of this from him. It's still going to be McLaughlin who's the central figure of this entire thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's the villain, but that's why I'm so outraged about the deal they've cut with him.
Well, this kind of
why was it necessary? Why
well,
was it?
He's got it. We'll find out.
Again,
it's
a pretty sweetheart
deal.
There must be a huge payoff at the end, or they wouldn't have done this. I mean, I can't believe they would have just.
Tim Murray's a huge payoff.
I don't know whether there's anything.
Maybe it's more than Murray. I mean,
who knows? Who knows?
Paul McMurrow wrote a great thing in Commonwealth Magazine the other day about how this is just the beginning of all his trips as he absolutely put it in the piece, he referred to it as the House of Pain on fanfare.
That's what we heard about the probation department with Sal DeMacy. Nothing, it appears, is ever going to come of that either.
They did bring a lot of people
well over
up
a year
to
ago
that.
DeMacy,
that's not over. They're still
that
going
ago,
to Worcester.
They're March.
Still being, remember, you could, as again, going back to our friend Javi Silvergrave's book, they can go to the last day of that 7 years and drag it out because it's in their interest to do it. It drains you your resources and it gives them the maximum amount of time to find every little thing they need to find out to see whether they want to bring the case. So it is not unusual for a case to come out 6.5 years later because they've used every single moment of the time to try to get as much information as they can. So
such a colossal waste.
Resources?
Resources. Public dollar. You know, it's like... Some of these things are, I mean, I don't mean to sound so dismissive, so small potatoes.
Yeah.
How much fundraising money could Tim Murray possibly have gotten out of this? It's like...
Well, it comes back to restoring, restoring the public's faith in its in government agencies.
Well, you want to restore the faith, then you take the fundraising out of it. You have public financing, and then you don't have any of this problem. You don't have to worry about going to people for the money or who should I take from and not take from.
All right, this is a perfect opportunity to segue into Jesse Jackson Jr. I mean, this is an astounding fall from grace. I mean, this guy pleads guilty to taking $750,000 out of his own campaign funds. So it's like he's got the money and he's buying furs and, you know,
$44,000 Rolex watches, Michael Jackson memorabilia.
What are people thinking? And part of it is the hubris, the arrogance, that's what happens to people like Michael McLaughlin, even on a smaller scale, you know, that you're so self-important that that's the rebel in me. The rebel in Jesse Jackson Jr. said it was okay.
In 1988, I worked for the Dukakis presidential campaign, and our main competitor, if you remember that year, was Jesse Jackson Sr. And this is before the personal stuff had come out about him and the wives and all that. But the one thing that was interesting was at the time, him being a lot younger, I mean, people even then said, this is the guy who could be the first black president of the United States. This guy is really smart, legitimately bright, good. whether he is bipolar or whether he's just corrupt, but it's amazing to see. This is a much bigger fall from grace, if you will, because he was the one.
You're talking about Jesse Jackson Jr.
Not only in Chicago, but around the country, people thought the father lays the groundwork the son comes in and picks up the.
It makes you question the whole bipolar thing. He was in that rehab center, whether that was just putting off the inevitable, which was this.
And this has been a long, drawn-out fall.
Wasn't he
grace.
Also involved in the scandal involving Rod Blagojevich?
He was involved in the Blagojevich thing loosely,
too. To lay out the...
This has been a long, steady fall from grace for Jesse Jackson Jr. And you're talking about the amount of money he was able to pull out of his campaign fund, too, for his all the personal largesse he's got that he spent it on. This is a guy, by the way, who had a 100% airtight, safe seat. There was nobody who was going to even stand. Right. He didn't even show up in his primary.
He was elected last November.
Yeah, he didn't even run in that race. And he still won with something like 70% of the vote.
Here's my question.
Even campaign at all. And he had challenges. Granted,
they were small
fish.
My question is, I can tell you, and if you had in Steve Lynch, Eddie Markey, John Tierney, any member of the delegation, Barney Frank, any of the senators, Scott Brown, they will tell you that the FEC goes over their damn reports with a fine-tooth comb. You get letters over every single thing. Michael Dukakis didn't finish settling with the FEC till 6 years after the race was over. That's how detailed. How this guy got away with making filings, taking in this money and expending this money on his campaign account, and no one noticed it. It's just,
somebody did.
Well, but how long did he do it? I mean, it wasn't like a week or a month. We're talking about this being over a fairly significant period of time. It makes no sense to me.
It took Dukakis 6 years.
Dole, literally was 7 years.
I know Hillary Clinton just closed her stuff, too.
Dole was seven, Dukakis was six, and Hillary, there you go. I mean,
you guys are doing it without, like, the advanced computer technology.
Computers, everything. Oh, my God, a piece of paper. What about this? If you have an aide, and this is kind of funny, if you have an aide and they rent a car, and they rent the car, and then the car runs out of gas. So they just abandon the car. They never bring it back. I mean, in campaigns, stuff like that happens. Yeah, you got to get to the next location. You know, I'm out of and so there's all kinds of craziness. Republican, no one's being corrupt. They're just being
lazy, stupid.
Lazy, stupid, and sloppy.
Yeah.
Talking to Michael Goldman, president of Goldman Associates, and Garrett Quinn, author of the Less Is More blog on Boston.com. And we're talking politics as usual. We've been talking about Chelsea Housing Chief Mike McLaughlin getting that sweetheart deal with the feds. And then we segued in to talk about Jesse Jackson Jr., who I don't think is going to get such a sweetheart deal from the feds because he admitted his guilt. But he's gonna get some serious jail time. And so is his wife.
Yeah, that's the other thing. His wife is implicit in all this.
Michael McLaughlin's wife, unfortunately, has been for many years has suffered from Alzheimer's.
Oh,
a very
really?
Public thing. Oh, yeah. And, you know, that might have had a piece. I mean, you know, again, it's these are all the pieces that no one knows about that get weighed into these whole, you know.
The feds are going to weigh that in?
They weigh in everything. And in the case of Jesse Jackson Jr., it may very well be that initially he did everything he could to obfuscate rather than cooperate. And that weighs in. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on the radio, but we all know that the more the perception is that you're falling on your sword, you're willing to admit what you did was wrong, the better it's going to be for you.
All right, moving along here. So John Connolly, Boston City Councilor, is emerging as a likely Tom Menino challenger. His name has been obviously bandied about for the last couple of weeks or so. What do you think? In or out, and I still can't quite judge about Mayor Menino. I ran into him at the Chinese New Year's on Saturday night. He's still, he looks a lot better, but he's still not all that mobile. You know, people had to come to him. He didn't really get up and move around much.
If Connolly doesn't run this time around, he'll be setting himself up in a nice position to run again later down the road. I mean, $315,000 for a city councilor or anybody running in a municipal race is a good cushion to start with. But let's not forget here, Menino still has double that in his bank and could easily just flick a switch and start pulling down the money. Given the fact that he's been kind, you know, his fundraising's been down for a while.
I don't know anything about John Connally. He's been down physically too.
Right?
I had him on the show a few times, but I don't know anything about him.
Well, he's Michael and Linda Connally, former judge.
Michael Joseph Connally, the Secretary of State.
And, you know, who had a thing, you know, was very close to Weld, if you remember, Weld and Salucci. And the son is a Democrat, and so it's kind of an interesting. And people, I don't know him at all. I think I've met him once, but people think he's a nice guy. I'm gonna give you the ultimate bank shot
West
on
Roxbury
this one.
Resident.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna give you the ultimate bank shot on this one.
Bank shot.
Three corner pool bank shot. Yeah. Bing, bing, bing.
Mm-hmm. Got
okay.
It.
We have a series of guys who are lining up potentially if the mayor doesn't run. All of them, state reps, state senators, city councilors, councilors at large.
The head of the T.
Right, are lining up. Every one of them is a B player, meaning they all have something to say, but no one has no one's named Kennedy and no one's named Menino. And,
yeah.
Okay. Now Steve Lynch does something very interesting. He jumps the line and he runs for United States Senate. And for a window of time, his name recognition is going to soar. Just like, why is Michael Capuano the most serious candidate along with Steve Grossman who's run statewide? Well, because he's run statewide also for the Senate. Mm. Now he's thinking about governorship. Mm. Lynch now, instead of just representing a tiny piece of Boston, Southie, and mostly the suburbs, suddenly everyone in Boston is going to see his name, going to see him debate. He jumps that line.
Really? And goes for mayor?
After the race.
Really?
Let's say he doesn't win. I'm not saying he's not working.
I see.
He wants to be senator, but the worst thing that happens, he's still congressman, and he's set himself up in terms of name recognition, which you just... Connally takes a look at this and says, I've got to get into this play because this guy's outplaying me. It's another Irish guy from another part of the city of Boston. I've got to do something which moves me ahead of all of those other players who are thinking about this run, who are the B players like me. Now, I could be wrong, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And in the end, I think there's zero chance that Menino won't run. But if he doesn't, and even if you lose to him, so what? You lost to the most popular mayor, probably, amazingly.
So what? Look what happened to Sam Yoon and Michael
Flaherty.
Well, except
Sam Yoon doesn't even live in Boston.
Here's the difference. Michael Connally is a Boston-rooted guy. He could take that loss and know
John
that
Connally.
Even
survive.
If I'm sorry, John Connally and survive and know that in 4 years the mayor isn't going to be.
He's only
39
years old, so
and
it's
a
not
kid,
like
right.
He's a kid.
Yeah,
he's a kid from political.
I think.
So what do you think? I mean,
Menino. Here's the thing with Menino too. If Menino. Of anybody who looks like they could emerge and challenge Menino in this cycle, Connally could be one of those guys too that would, I think, in some ways appeal to, you know, the future Boston Selco types because he's younger. Yeah, he's been here his whole life, but he's younger. He's not an old school Boston.
He isn't.
He's a different type of guy.
He said he's going to make schools his big campaign issue. As everybody may remember, a couple years ago when there was that frozen meat scandal in the Boston public schools, he was one of the ones who discovered that there was expired frozen meat, you know, inside the Boston public schools. I don't think the Boston public schools is a winning, you know, gambit for the majority of people who live. The majority of people who live in Boston think the public schools are a rat hole. When you really look at the money that goes to each individual student, $9,000-$10,000 a head, it's like you're thinking, well, how much more can you possibly give that's going to make a difference there?
Well, I know Menino talked about education and opportunities a lot in his State of the State speech. This all comes down to – I really think this all comes down to what the mayor wants to do. And he can wait until a day or two before you have to pull papers and file.
What is the date on that? You know all those geeky things.
He can wait.
When is it? It's March sometimes.
At my desk, I have a sheet printed out with like all the dates and the requirements.
But I have it in your head.
I don't know them off the top of my head, no.
Menino is one of the most interesting political figures.
May 13th. Thank you.
My birthday.
He's got plenty of time to work.
There you go.
He'll file
Menino
May 12th.
Is one of the most interesting guys. When you think he has been in as long as he's been in and never had a major scandal, I mean, by the nature of
or
the beast,
really,
right? by the nature of the number of people you have working for you, someone's going to, you know, and
well, he's presided over some bad events, you know, the Victoria Snellgrove thing, but, in particular.
Yeah, but you know, he wasn't blamed for that.
Directly, and I think people basically, and again, the other thing I always say about him, which is stunning, I would say there is no other mayor in this country, and maybe no other mayor in my whole political career, who ever got a poll back that showed that more than half the people in a major city
have met him.
Have personally, don't know his name. Yeah. If you got a 60 on your name rec, you'd be thrilled. 60% of people say, I shook his hand.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a stunning, stunning number. I think Tierney, to be honest, to change subjects, I think one of the reasons Tierney survived is because he had, over the years, seen, over 16 years, seen a huge number.
I see he's on a rehab tour with the media, too. He gave a sit-down to the Globe.
Yeah. You know, it's what you do. I mean, you know, the fact is that next time you get to run against, he has to run against ideology, not his wife. Yeah. So it's a bit, you know, it's not a bad place. But going back to Menino, you know, how do you, unless something huge happens, and there's a huge, but that doesn't mean you don't run. You run because you think you can win. You run because you think it's going to help your career, move you forward, raise your name recognition. And Michael, I mean, I'm sorry, and John Connolly may simply be saying, you know what? If I don't do this now, I'm just going to be one of the guys, one of the names in the back of the pack, a good guy. You know, we saw that. Emily and I are old enough to remember when they had that great race back in 83 when Bob Rufo and Dennis Kearney and Larry the Carrer. I mean, terrific young talent. Yeah. And Ray Flynn ended up, you know, emerging from that sort of morass.
Dave Finneran, that's what I was thinking.
You know, Finneran, you know, that's right, Finneran, Flynn, you know, right? Flynn and King.
Well, Mel King. Well, Mel King ran. Yeah, that's right.
He ran more than
Rainbow.
Once.
What was his thing called? The Rainbow Push
Coalition.
Rainbow Coalition.
Rainbow Coalition.
The point is that you know, all of those guys are still around, still working, still doing interesting things, but they had their small window shut down to be.
Yeah.
A mayor and then later governor and then whatever. And maybe Connolly is simply saying, at my age, at this point, with the city council, I've done as much as I can do. It's better for me to be out there talking big issues all across the city.
He's been in three terms already, so yeah, I mean.
You know, and remember, there's a lot of people who are looking at this.
And off the top of my head, too, just thinking, you know, West Roxbury, I believe, has a higher percentage turnout, a higher turnout rate than a lot of other portions of the city. I don't know the facts and figures off the top of my head, but I know for a fact that they have a solid turnout rate, and that would help him a ton.
But, you know, again, you have to win. You have to win Austin Brighton. You've got to win, you know, Mattapan. You've got to win Hyde Park, where the mayor is. You've got to win downtown. I mean, it's a tough city to run in to put to, when you're – city councilor.
And schools is not the sexy issue.
And again, we remember when the Boston City Council. Hold on. We remember when the Boston City Council was with Pixie Palladino, and the city council was where the political action was. The Globe would cover the Boston City Council the way we now think of them covering the governor's office. I mean, it was like that's where all the energy was at one time.
It always comes down to.
Concrete room.
You know, property taxes and, you know, what your money goes for and
snow.
Well, you know, people don't, you know, you got to spend the money on the snowstorm. I'm talking about, you know.
No, I meant if you don't do a good
job. Union negotiations, right. People care about that.
Right. You know, fire department, police department.
They totally care about that. Property taxes, you know, well, paying for all the big events, you know.
You know what? I'm going to say something that's going to
make no. What we're saying is there's no clear signature issue, at least, going into this.
No.
But you know what? If I'm the mayor, there's part of me that says, and I agree with you, that he's going to be able to raise a significant amount of money very quickly.
Yeah.
That says, you know what? This may very well be my last time. I want to tell people what I did. And a race allows you to tell your story.
Yeah.
And if you don't think you're going to have a really strong race against you, it you know, but what's fascinating, Emily, is what you said. Nobody really knows.
Yeah.
You know, we all think we know, but until a mayor makes up his mind,
it's a mystery.
It's good to be king.
It's like the old, you know, white whale run. Got snookered there. All right, talking to Michael Goldman and Goldman Associates and Garrett Quinn of the Boston.com blog, Less is More. All right, so who watched the Scott Brown interview with Maria Stephanos? I saw clips of it.
I tried, by the way, to pocket tweet.
By the way, that's what he told her, that those
it's kind of hard.
Those late night tweets were pocket tweets. There's no such thing. Pocket phone call.
Right.
But you can't pocket tweet somebody.
No.
You have to open the application. You have to open the app.
I mean, you're talking about lie, you know, a stupid lie.
He doesn't understand that then.
Lie. You know, because he can't explain. Because he couldn't explain what the real reason.
What was the real reason, Michael? You think you know.
Let me put it to you this way. When he said the last time he got drunk was in college, I think that that may be a slight exaggeration.
I believe it was, just correct, he said it was his bachelor party.
Oh, his bachelor party.
But
okay.
Close enough. But I
there's no other explanation.
It's such a weird.
It's not the end of the world, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's not, you know, would this have really impacted him in the if he ran for Senate? No. This would be a stupid little meme that everybody could have some fun with and have a laugh over and ah ha ha, he was maybe. He poorly spelled a bunch of whatever and tweeted it and it became this big thing. But
what do you think
sunk him. People
no,
have done,
not at all.
It
would,
this isn't like he sent like a photo of himself shirtless or something.
No.
This is just him.
This is not Anthony Weiner moment.
What I found, and this has generally been my practice on Twitter, because occasionally you get people who say, oh, you're just, you know, you're a hack or whatever, something, they yell at you for something you wrote. Unless it's like a real person, I generally ignore them. And I'm always fascinated by people that engage with people with like on Twitter with anonymous trolls that don't have names. They have, you know, their picture's a cat or it's just some generic thing. They have no name. They're not, you know, they're nobody of significance. You know, they have less than 100 followers. Like, why are you engaging this person? They're just, they're getting their rocks off by you getting so, getting under their skin. And he did it to like a bunch of people. Okay. I was kind of fascinated by that.
So now we're going to do rants and raves. I heard Emily Rooney on basically talking about how Scott Brown is really gorgeous. Now, compared to me, he is not. Let's face it. He doesn't even come close. But putting that aside.
Oh, my God.
I know. And there we go again. Here I see it again.
And I ran into a football game a few weeks ago, and I had the same – that was my initial thought. And then when he appeared on Fox the other day, he looked like an Adonis.
Now, having said that
– he did.
Since that happens not to be my personal area of expertise, and I don't look, you know, I don't get it, but that's okay. What's fascinating to me is why he would go to the one area, Garrett, where he's weak. He is not a, with all due respect,
he's not glib.
He's not glib. He's not funny. When he tries to be funny, he's
not all that
mean.
Yeah.
And people who are quick-witted and snarky and fast are the ones who win Twitter. And
No, I'm not talking Twitter here. I'm talking Fox. Why would he ever take this brand, the Emily Rooney? God, I love this guy because he looks so good. Why would you ever want anyone to know? And they will, because
half of being on television is being good-looking.
I know that, but you also have to fill. There are a lot of ugly people who make a lot of money because they can. They're not empty suits. And with all due respect, whatever other skill set he has, and I'm sure he has some.
Yeah, Karl Rove wasn't anything to take right home about.
You've got to be able to be. You know that. What you do. You've got to be able to be quick.
Also, could he stumble himself? Well, as John Keller was saying that on Friday night on Beat the Press, too, that he could say something that could then hurt him for down the road.
Oh, absolutely. If you're running for governor in a deep, deep blue state like Massachusetts, and you're going to go on Fox. And I understand, you know, I don't begrudge anybody trying to make some money.
No,
particularly
not
after. And this is this is the time for him to strike when the iron's hot, because he can make a ton of money. He still has a lot of cachet. He can make a lot of money. Go for it. But if you're going to run for office for governor, all right, you've already got a Senate. You've already got a voting record in the state Senate. The state Senate, the state House, and in the U.S. Senate to go against you. Now you're going on Fox. And this is going to give you not only just more a bigger trail of comments and sound bites to be used against you. So every time he goes on there, you know.
By the way, is it a regular gig? I mean, I can't.
Is it like every Thursday? You got the Dick Morris.
It's like a Sarah. It's
no,
like a
they
Sarah
got
Palin
rid of those
type.
Two. Yeah, they get rid of Sarah Palin.
Well,
and
Dick,
get
Morris,
rid of Dick Morris.
It amazes me that anybody wants to pay Dick Morris anything.
Anyway, he's the worst.
Mitt Romney's going to win in a landslide. Buy my book. No, I just. You know, it is actually generally offensive to me that people take Dick Morris seriously. And
I can't get
over
him.
I go back to 1982. I go back to 1982 when he had Ed King. So
yeah.
I go back a long way with him being wrong about elections.
You know, the thing I am still baffled by Brown. You know, he should definitely keep the door propped open for anything. And I wrote about this a while back though. A Brown Baker primary could be like Salucci Malone in 98. It could be really bad
not
for the Republican
happen.
Party.
It won't happen. They won't,
it could
they
be
won't,
really bad for
not
them.
Not enough Republicans to make it worth your while to do it. They'll cut a deal of some sort. And
a
I
Baker
don't blame,
Brown
but,
ticket?
Well, no. I mean, one of them will run, one won't. I mean, yeah. I think it's...
No, exactly. That won't happen.
I just can't imagine that the two of them would spend the kind of money. In the end, the number of people who show up in a Republican primary, there are eight guys. You might as well just give them each $2,000 and have them show. I mean, I don't mean to be funny, but that's the truth.
Well, no,
economy of scale in a primary is
tough. Yeah, it's about... What is it? About 12%, right? It's around 12% of them are registered. I really don't understand. You know, I could see now Brown says something on Fox that's outrageous, or he appears with somebody who's inflammatory, and
or he tries to be cute. You know, Emily, you know that when you
which
hear,
he has done
comes to your head. You know, you say this is going to be fun. Somebody out there hears and says, "What did she say?"
Yeah, what was the thing he said? He said, I think it was in 2012 during when Warren was considering getting in the race. He said. Said something like she said something about her like keeping her clothes on or something, quip about him not being naked or sure. I forget what
it was. It was the poster. They won't find a poster like that about her.
And I just Brown is.
I was hoping you could tell me since you're
no, but he's such a he is an incredibly skilled retail politician. There are very few people I've seen work a room that are as good as Scott Brown. He is an unbelievable politician, but he definitely has some weaknesses. He has some really significant.
But I'll tell you. Something, Garrett, you're young and I'm older. I'm going to give you a thing. Virtually no one stays as well preserved as I do.
Yeah.
At some point, they're going to say, wow, look at the bags. He get gray.
Fleshy. He's got a long ways to go before he hits that threshold.
Greatness can make him look statesmanlike.
So it's interesting. Well, he claims he wasn't bitter or upset, and that's what he told Maria Stefanos. But he said Gail was, which is kind of interesting, that she was really mad with the outcome. Interesting.
Hey, wives sometimes take it harder than the husband.
Personally,
saw that with Ann Romney when she was. This isn't easy when she had that outburst on CNN about running.
That's a very good analogy. Actually, that's a very good.
You know, it's interesting. I had Morty Meehan on Greater Boston last night. We were talking about, expanding into Division I sports, but he was saying that he really thought Scott Brown. He thought Scott would have won this special election if he had stayed in.
This one.
He said if he'd stayed in the race, he thought he would have won.
With all due respect, I think that the problem with running for Senate as a Republican is you carry the entire Republican ideology on your back. When you run for governor like Well did, like Salucci did, like Romney did, you could say it's about me, not about those guys. When you have to carry Mitch McConnell in Massachusetts, it's like trying to carry Ted Kennedy in North Dakota. I mean, if you're a Democrat and you can't win. So it's not just here and about us. It's really about the ideology being so out of step with where we are. I would remind you that one of the most popular Republicans in Massachusetts history was Bill Weld in 1996. Probably the weakest Democrat in terms of polling data was John Kerry running for re-election. And yet in the end, Bill Weld couldn't get over the hump, and that was a much more liberal Republican Party than we got today. So with all due respect to Marty, I just don't think that's necessarily correct.
Yeah, but it was interesting because he's the only one I've actually ever heard say that.
All those Weld-Kerry debates, by the way, are in the C-SPAN archives. And
oh, yeah,
I've
we have
them.
Too.
Those are great, great debates.
Classic.
That's how much of a nerd I am.
That's sick.
Those
that's bad. All right, Garrett Quinn. Writes for Reason Magazine, author of the Boston.com blog, Less is More. And Michael Goldman, president of Goldman & Associates. Thanks for joining us for politics, as usual. And Kelly Crossley is back.
Hey, Emily, have you ever thought about whether it'd be possible to interest folks with guns to trade them in for sports tickets?
Actually, I think that's a good idea.
Well, it's worked in some other places, and now there's
maybe have to be a sports package, because if you had a gun worth $1,000, you might want more than one ticket.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's worked other places, so now it's coming back again.
Give it a try, whatever works.
We'll
that's
be
my
talking
theory.
About it. Yeah. All right. I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio.